I mean, from the very first interview with the agents, I was like, I just want to work. Yeah. Whether it's, you know, in commercials or on the stage or on the screen, whatever, I just want to do this for a living.
Hey everyone, this is Kara Lee.
This is Daniel.
And this is the Actor Hack Podcast.
We're coming from Brooklyn, New York, and we have Matt with us.
Hey, Matt.
What up?
So Matt, tell us where you're from.
I am from Palo Alto, California.
And where did you go to school?
I went to school at the University of Arizona.
What made you go there?
It's funny, when people ask me, like, why do you go to school in Arizona? I have no idea how I ended up
there.
I used to go visit an uncle in Arizona, and I think so the state was just familiar to me. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I wanted to leave California, because that's where I'd grown up.
And, right.
And I'm sorry for my ignorance. Where's Palo Alto in California?
It is, like, halfway between San Francisco and San Jose.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Where Facebook and Google and
Silicon
Valley is taken over. And
it really was kind of close. I mean, you know.
It's like 6 hours north of L.A.
Yeah.
What did you study there?
I studied acting and musical theater.
Okay.
Like two separate BFA programs. From the get-go, I didn't want to be pigeonholed as one or the other. I loved music. I loved singing. And I loved acting. But you kind of had to pick either or.
Yeah.
But I wanted to do stage combat and screen acting from the acting program, and I also wanted to do the voice lessons and the, you know, other things from the musical theater department. So I did both, and I had to get permission from the dean and all this stuff. And
so it was like a double major, or
I graduated with BFAs in both.
Okay.
Did it take you longer?
It did. I had to spend an extra semester taking other credits and stuff. But by the time I had finished my, call them the general ed requirements, I was basically in my own conservatory, because after that stuff was out of the way, it was like all acting classes and art classes, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Not a lot of students got the same experience.
So even though it was a BFA program, you still took like gen ed classes?
Yeah, they introduced this tier system when I was a freshman, where there were like 20 classes that you had to take.
Right.
You know, you pick one of these three classes and one of these three classes. So I had to take, like, Greek pottery and a bunch of, like, odd things.
But that's good, because sometimes a BFA will, like knock all that out, and you basically are in a conservatory.
Yeah, no, I ended up in some really interesting classes. Yeah. You know, I had to take, like, a philosophy class and a jazz history class.
Did you like that program?
I did, because it can get very competitive. It can get, you know, if you get a small role in a show that you really wanted to be the lead in, or if you just don't get the opportunities that you were hoping you would. There are other things going on campus that you can find, and other chances to perform, comedy groups, improv, making short films. Like, there's so much stuff on campus that even if you're stuck playing Spear Carrier in the Shakespeare show, like, you can still, you
there's
know,
still
do
opportunities.
Stuff, opportunities to act. I was lucky. I got a lot of good roles, like, from sophomore year on, but that was just because I was one of the only leading men in my class. And if I hadn't been that lucky, I might have not had the same experience.
Now, did y'all do a showcase?
We did do a showcase in at the school. We flew out some of the New York agents that had contacts with some of our professors.
Oh, okay.
And actually, I met with a couple agents there, and I met with them when I moved to New York, and then I've been with the same agents for 15 years.
That's amazing.
Since I got out of college, which is, I'm just lucky it worked out that way.
Yeah, that's so great. So, I've never heard of it sort of being reversed. I mean, I know that schools are having showcases here all the time, but I didn't know that they, I mean, how many agents did they fly out?
I want to say it was about a dozen, maybe. They brought some from LA, obviously, because that's closer.
Right.
But because of who made up our professor staff, a lot of their contacts were in New York, because a lot of them had worked in New York prior. So it was some of their old agents, some of their agents' friends. I don't think that they do that many people anymore, but it was just lucky at the time that they still were able to fly some people out who want to get out of New York to the warm weather.
Did you know you wanted to move to New York?
Yeah, I did. I had been to LA a lot, and so it just always seemed like the next step to me. And I always liked doing theater a lot, and I'd heard that the New York theater scene is much more centralized than in LA, and so it just seemed like the right answer. And I sold my car and I just bought a plane ticket. And
when you got here, did you already have the agent, or was that, did you take
I had
a
had some
meeting?
Interest so okay. I had meetings set up, you know, like, when you get into town, give us a call, we'll set up a meeting. I met with two or three agencies, I think, and I just went with my gut. which was one of the first agencies that sort of courted me in Arizona, and I've been with them ever since. And they've changed a lot over the years. People have come and gone, but
right.
I've just always stuck with them. Just felt like the right thing.
Yeah. What was your first gig once you got
My
here?
First gig, it took a little over 6 months, but my first gig was actually at New York City Opera. They did a production of Cinderella, and I was Chris Sieber's understudy.
Oh, nice.
Which was just amazing. The cast was all of these television stars and Broadway stars, and I got to sit in rehearsal and watch them do their thing and create this old classic with sort of a new spin on it. So just to be in the room with them and see them humanized up close.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's not magic going on here. We're just right. like just doing a show cool. just like we did in college. It's right. just they're a little more funny. They're a little older and they have a little more experience. And so to see them put together this show and be a part of that, I think it was a really good learning experience right off the bat. Of like, oh, okay, this is what this is.
When you first moved here, did you have, like, a survival job?
My first job in New York was working the stage door security at Studio 54 during... Or it was right after Cabaret, yeah. It was Assassins.
Okay.
So I just sat back there during the show. And it was another sort of humanizing experience because, you know, Neil Patrick Harris and all these people would come in the back door. And mm-hmm. I literally sat next to the curtain that separated me from the Broadway stage. So I would hear the show every night.
I've never known someone who's had that job. How did you get that job? That's so interesting.
It was totally
to
random.
Me.
I went to a high school with someone who worked at Roundabout. And when I moved here, I told all my friends that I like, hey, I'm looking for a job.
Yeah.
What do you got? And she's like, well, they're just starting up this thing and call this number and talk to her.
Is that not a union position?
It's totally not. Or it wasn't at the time, at least. I'm not even sure that they interviewed me. I feel like I just showed up one day and right. like,
you just
right. here's the keys.
Are you fairly
you
tall?
Sit.
Okay.
Because it's when they move into the theaters, some of the stuff happens so fast.
Yeah.
So they're just like, okay, we need someone to do this. We need someone to do this. And I think they had lost whoever was working there before, and they just needed somebody.
And cool. So did you like doing that?
I loved doing it, because I felt like I got to be close
yeah.
to a show, even though I wasn't in it, obviously. And it was fun to be around these people who, you know, Dennis O'Hare and like James Barber and Mario Cantone and all these people that you shake their hands and you get their mail and you're like, oh, like we're all just, you're just more experienced versions of what I want to be, you know?
Yeah, you're just yeah. a person doing your job.
Exactly. So again, it was that great feeling just to see the people who are being really successful just doing what you do in the classroom.
I'm obsessed
it's like
with
that
show. I
connective
love that
tissue
time.
That
yeah.
you just don't get if you're not there. The experience of doing that, it's like just years of education.
Did you do that up until you got the Cinderella gig? Or
yes.
So then did you quit that and then you did the show?
I think I had to quit and then I went off to do the show.
And so how long was that gig for?
It was a couple of months.
What was your experience understudying?
It was the first time I'd ever understudied, so it was hard because I didn't realize when we started how little time that we would have to go on stage. Like, mm-hmm. there's so much homework you have to do by yourself, learning lines and learning mm-hmm. the songs and not let alone blocking. And it can be tricky to think you know more than you do. You can do the monologue sitting on your couch at home, but then when you stand up to right. do it, you know, to the
you don't get any of that, like, muscle memory going through it every day.
Yeah, it's like right before opening, you might have, like, an understudy run-through, and you're just expected to know the entire thing, and they don't really... They'll stop if there's problems.
Right.
But there's, like, dance numbers that you've never run before.
That's insane. That's terrifying.
Kind of
yeah. So it's just, like, you get the whole company together, and some people are understudying more than one role. So you right. have, like, a stage manager reading one character, because the guy who's the swing is reading one of the other roles. And
right.
So you're just, like, doing kind of a half production and trying to get through the whole show. And
Kai, you just, like, really have to be on your feet. So then what happened? What was next, then?
I think I did some regional theater. I was auditioning for anything. Vermont and Ohio, and I ended up doing... A show in a barn. I did a show in Vermont where I lived in a cow shed.
That was the show, or
it was in a barn. It was Bat Boy.
Mm.
Oh,
and it was in a barn. My lodging was literally a part of the barn that they had turned into a bedroom. That a year before, I think a cow had been living in there. So you know, you do these like small
right.
things where you can get them, and it was one of my favorite experiences that I've had. It sounds mm-hmm. so crazy to talk about now, but.
what was your living situation in New York? Were you just, like, subletting, or what was
I was subletting my... We had, like, a three-bedroom place, I think, in Queens. When we would go out of town to work, we would just sublet our rooms. Luckily, we had a situation where we could do that. So it was a lot of back and forth, a lot of...
Did you know your roommates?
Yeah.
And did they come from school?
Yep, or from school.
Would you guys do, like, just, like, the logistics-wise? Like, would it be just, like, Craigslist, or, like, just friends
of friends?
Yeah, this
is, like, I think this is even, like, pre-Facebook, so it was... You just go on Craigslist, just tell your friends.
Word
of mouth, exactly.
So then you did regional work, and then was that basically then when you got the tour, or was there space in between that?
Yeah, it was basically just a lot of regional stuff, and then I was actually out of town when they first called me in, and I had like 4, 5, 6 auditions for the tour, and finally, like, the right understudy track came up where I fit what they needed. And I went on a tour, and I was going to go out for 6 months, so I subletted, and we were just going to move out of that apartment to somewhere else in Brooklyn, and I booked the job on, like, a Thursday, and they're like, Sunday, we need you in Seattle. So it's like, okay, pack up your life into a small bag, and I ended up staying out on that tour for 3.5 years.
Wow.
And so you said the show was Jersey Boys, right? So what track was it?
Initially, I was in the ensemble, and I was covering 2 of the 4 seasons.
Oh, okay.
And I did that for about a year, and I was like, okay, this was really fun. I had a lot of cool, you know, towns that I visited and made a lot of friends, and I was, like, ready to go back to New York, and one of the lead roles opened up. So I flew back to New York and auditioned for it, and I got that. So they bumped me up to a different role that I really wanted, and so I stayed out there for another 2.5 years.
That's
that
awesome
role.
It's funny to me that you would be on this tour and then you would have to go back to New York to audition for it's just
right but
it's
of course
so
these
crazy.
People making those decisions aren't there either
right
up there
right
yeah because most of them are in New York so it's just easier for them to congregate them.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I always assume on these, like, long tours that as an understudy you would probably go on.
When I first joined, it was like the second incarnation of the cast, like, okay, a lot of the actors were still there from the beginning, but some people had just been replaced. So when you go into a show initially, a lot of times there's like 6 months or a couple of months where no one calls out.
Right.
There was a swing when I joined the show that had only done, you know, like 5 or 6 shows. And then as the cast got there, as the longer the cast was there, then people started to call out more. And then the next year he was on, like, you know, 100 times. So
right.
It's sort of this, like, exponential thing the longer you go. So I didn't go out a ton early on, and then there was, like, an injury, someone hurt themselves, so I had to go on for a couple weeks. Then he had surgery, so I took over the role for a little while. So I'd had a lot of experience playing one of the 2 roles by the time I auditioned for it.
What was tour life like?
It was a really lucky experience because it was one of the biggest shows of, like, the last 2 decades.
Right.
And to be on a show like that, going to towns like Boston and DC and Seattle for the first time, there is, like, a palpable excitement.
Now, are you literally on a bus?
Sometimes. Okay. It was mostly flights because they don't always, the way that the theaters book the shows, they don't always line up date-wise to, like, have, you know, Oklahoma and Kansas and, like, just drive across the border. A lot of times it'll be like, we booked Seattle and then we booked Tampa. So they're not going to spend the money to truck the set. It's never that far, but it's never convenient. You know, there was, like, 1 trip where we bussed because it was Chicago to, you know, Minnesota or something like that. But mostly it was flying.
Did you like that? That sort of... Was there a point that you were like, yeah, I need to be in one place now?
Eventually, yeah. I actually met my now wife while I was out on tour.
Oh,
and
really?
And so, you know, doing long distance for a certain period of time can be exhausting. And it was just time. It was just time to get home, time to...
Totally.
You know, and playing 1 role 1,000 times is amazing, you know, when you get that kind of reception from these new cities. So that made it easier. But at the same time, it was hard eventually to keep doing the same thing over and over. And there are other shows I wanted to do and other opportunities that were happening in New York that I was reading about. You know,
yeah.
Right.
So, it's hard to know when it's time. I mean, you can feel it, but at the same time, it's like, okay, should I ride this out a little bit longer?
Totally. So we made a decision, and I set my end date, and I came back to New York and just jumped right back in. It's mm-hmm. and it's interesting going from, you know, 100 miles an hour back to zero.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you wake up the next Tuesday and you don't have a show that night. And you're like, oh, what do I know? And when are the auditions? Because I'm ready.
when you were covering, you were still performing in the ensemble, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you weren't like sitting around waiting for somebody to hurt themselves.
Yeah.
You were actually doing something.
Yeah, it's even more different when you're like a swing and mm-hmm. you're an offstage swing. Because you have no idea when your next onstage appearance is going
to
be.
That's got to be really tough.
And it can be really hard for those guys because, you know, you can go months without ever doing a show and you're hearing over the monitors all the applause and everyone having fun. And you get to go through seasons of television shows and books and you get to do whatever you want in the dressing room. But eventually you're like, okay, what am I really getting paid to do here?
Yeah, because we have a client right now who's a swing in the Once tour,
mm-hmm.
but thankfully he's coming in at a point where everyone's been there a while. Mm-hmm. It was a similar thing of like, he found out on Thursday and then he had to be in North Dakota on Sunday. But so he's actually gone on a few times, and this was a few months ago. But yeah, most of the time he's just...
Right. Welcome to the show. I hope you're ready to play these four roles in the next week.
Right.
And that's totally. The flip side of it is it sounds... terrible never going on, but you can also be in a situation where you're covering five roles and you have to go on for all five in a week.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, where am I supposed to stand?
That's an actor's nightmare for me.
Which leg do I kick with? You know?
I know. It's
all of a sudden you're like, you're in the wrong wing. Like, oh no.
Oh God, that just like makes me nervous. So then you got back and you were just auditioning, just sort of mm-hmm. got back into the swing of things. And then did you move to Astoria? Like, did you guys have a place? Mm-hmm. Like, what was the logistics like?
At the time, we were staying up in Washington Heights, and then we found a place in Astoria, which had more space. So we moved out there.
When you got back from your tour, did your focus shift at all? Were you like, I want to do these specific things? Or was it just, I just want to do something different?
I definitely was trying to stay local.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so one of the ways that I found you can do that is to try to get more into TV and film.
Yeah.
Because New York was lucky with all the tax deals and everything that all these shows came back. And suddenly there were 20 shows in New York again. So that started to happen slowly. And I didn't realize how detached it seems from the theater world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Until I was like really got my feet wet. And I took some classes and started a practice group and just getting in front of the camera. Because it really is a different monster than doing theater.
And you had been on tour for doing a musical for a really long time.
In huge theaters. Right. Yeah. So there's definitely an adjustment and you just have to get comfortable.
What's this practice group like? What do you guys do?
You grab a couple friends and you grab a DSLR and
get some scripts and...
Yeah, get some scripts, pull them down off ShowFax or whatever and just pass them out the day before and everyone meets and everyone runs through their scenes.
I'm an idiot. What's a DSLR?
It's like a digital camera.
Oh, okay.
They sell all these gray things. Or people do it on their iPhones too, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
you just
totally.
Do TV auditions basically for your friends and then you can watch them all and see what you liked and what you didn't like and just getting comfortable in that setting of sitting in these tiny little weird rooms with a casting director reading these like incredibly difficult scenes sometimes, whether it's emotional or like just technical jargon of talking about all of the weapons that they found at the crime scene.
Right.
It's like, it can be really daunting. So you just have to practice that stuff because it's not a skill you can learn any other way.
Are there any classes you would recommend?
I mean, the go-to class in New York that everyone tries to get into is Bob Krakauer's class. And I was lucky enough a couple years ago to get started in that. And I've taken a handful of those since. And it's just, he just breaks it down to its basic components of like storytelling and what you're doing in front of the camera and how they tell stories with the camera and what you can do as an actor to, they're not tricks. There are parts of the craft that you learn that just start to become natural with the camera, you know, playing to the sides of the camera and just how to use the frame. There are things that you just don't learn in a lot of acting programs, definitely in colleges. They're just not doing a lot of on-camera stuff.
Which is ridiculous because that's really a huge way that actors make money. Which is something that drives me crazy because it's such a practical thing that all actors leaving a program should
have. And I've been in that class with just wonderful actors and they get up in front of the camera and they can't stay within the the confines of sort of the rules of how a camera works and yeah. staying in the frame. And you just have to learn those things. Otherwise, you just blow your auditions and it's hard to get in the room in the first place.
Yeah, that if you're too big, it's like, is that person going to want to call you in again? Because they don't get it.
And it's like, you can be a great actor, but if you just sit there and do absolutely nothing, oftentimes it can just look like you're doing nothing.
Yeah.
So there's this like yeah. balance of just being yourself and being in the moment and also learning how to manipulate the frame in a way that people aren't just staring at the same picture of you for a minute and a half.
Right. You guys recently had a baby.
We did.
And so how did that, I'm sure it changed so many things, but along with wanting to stay in town, how do you manage like auditions and schedules? Like how does
you get a long list of babysitters? That's the first problem. We just make it work. You get these auditions the day before a lot of times, and you just got to be able to be in a situation where you have enough people to call, or you can have a friend that you can just drop the kid off with.
Is she a performer as well?
No.
Oh, okay.
So she basically has a 9-to-5,
okay.
which makes half of it easy to schedule.
Yeah.
But because there aren't many auditions on the weekends, it also makes it more complicated for me in terms of finding babysitters. But you just make it work. And obviously, I'm trying not to leave town at all because I just love being at home.
Well, it's good. You did your tour thing.
Exactly.
Check that off. have you had to have any sort of restaurant job or anything like that?
Yeah. I've done, I worked at Columbia for a little while, like doing some temp, you know, mailing, all kinds of weird little things. bartended a little bit for a while. I've had a couple odd jobs in there.
Are you having to do that now?
I try to, yeah, I work it in when I can fit it into our schedule. I worked at a doctor's office for a little while, like alphabetizing files, you know. So just like totally. Odds and ends here and there.
And so is that mainly through like a temp agency or like...
Yeah, a temp agency or friends. Just weird how things pop up when you're like, hey, I need a job, let me know.
But it's tough, you don't want to be working during the day, right? Because she's gone during the day.
Yeah, and you want to be available for auditions too.
Right.
Just going back, when you moved here as an actor, what did you have ready? Did you have like 16 bar cuts ready? What was in your sort of toolkit?
I had a huge binder that they actually made us make. It was full of monologues. It was full of songs from different time periods, different styles, formatted resume, a stack of headshots, like that kind of stuff that definitely prepared us for.
I was going to say, that's more than most,
yeah.
So that's great.
And I went out of my way to print out every regional theater in the country. So I had this huge stack of papers. I don't know how much I ended up using it. A lot of the theater sites had just come out with new stuff you know, when I was graduating from college. So there was like Playbill and Backstage and all these things were just in development. And you could just print out indexes of addresses and casting directors. And so I tried to have all that stuff ready to go. And then it was just, you just find your way once you get off the bus, you know?
Totally. In that respect, did you feel prepared? Like when you walked into your first couple of auditions?
I thought, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But auditions is another thing that you audition for your school shows in college, but it's completely different when you're in a new office with people you don't know, in a table of, you know, a dozen people behind the table or somebody famous behind the table. It's just, you never know what it's going to look like when you get on the other side of that door. So that took a little while to get used to.
Yeah.
And you're also a tiny fish in a big pond all of a sudden. Auditioning is something that you just have to get used to and get good at. And the only thing you can control is your work. And I think it takes a little time to figure that out. Even if they tell you that in school, it's just one of those things that you know, it probably took me like a good 50, 100 auditions before I really felt comfortable being like, oh, okay. So this is what may or may not happen. And I was prepared, yes. And I knew the words to my monologue or the words to my song. And beyond that, it does take some time to really get comfortable doing it.
Yeah, because it is a very odd thing to be doing, actually. Yeah, because it's one thing to know it sort of like on an intellectual level or whatever, but to actually be comfortable and be confident and know it like in your body, I think is different and takes 100 auditions to sort of.
And I think when I moved here, I thought just knowing it was enough. You're like, oh, I learned the song. But it's like, that's just like the first step. Then you have to like grab out of it and you have to just be really on top of it and do your own thing. That's the most important thing. It's like, what do you bring to this character that someone else is not going to?
Yeah. So what would you say is like a typical week in your life?
Gosh. Hopefully auditions. And if there's not, I try to keep track of what's going on.
And how do you do that best?
I mean, the internet just, you know, Google searches and figure out which casting directors have moved addresses, what shows they're working on, how long they're running, what networks are they on. There's a lot of stuff on the SAG-AFTRA website. There's a lot of stuff. The information is out there, and it's just about finding about when they're shooting, where are they shooting, can I get in for this person?
Now, are you in SAG-AFTRA?
Mm-hmm.
And so when did you become a member?
Early this year or last year. I was a must join because I finally got the letter, you know, when I booked I forget what show it was, but they were like, you have to join now or you can't film
right.
the scene.
Because you had done, well, what is it, like two jobs or, I guess it's
Yeah, different. I think it was my third or fourth where you're a must join because I had done some stuff on HBO and then CBS.
And are you primarily auditioning for TV or are you doing commercial as well?
I used to do more commercials than I do now. Now it's mostly TV.
Mm-hmm.
The commercial auditions are always like so last minute.
Yeah.
And it makes it really hard for the babysitters. So I've been doing a little bit less of that stuff and mm-hmm. trying to focus more on just getting in for like the network shows. And
so then do you have a commercial agent or is that all done with your...
My primary agency doesn't have a commercial department and they are happier for it because it's like a whole nother...
Yeah, it's a whole nother beast.
Leg of the beast. So I'm freelancing with a commercial agency.
And so what was the first... You said you did an HBO and a CBS. So what was the first TV gig that you got?
First TV gigs that I did were these strange, you know, like Discovery ID and...
Right.
They do these like reenactment type of shows where...
And those are non-union,
some of them are
right?
scripted. Some of them are non-union. Most of them are all union, I should say. Some of them are scripted. Some of them are improv-based. I did a handful of those and it's just good to sort of be on set and see how things work. But it's also detached from like the rest of the industry.
Yeah.
So when I did Boardwalk Empire for HBO, that was my first like go to the studio, go to the major, you know, costume fittings and all these things lined up. And then all of a sudden you're just thrust into a room with a show that you love, you know,
yeah.
surrounded by a bunch of celebrities and they're like, go. You're like, aah. So that was really fun. It's really cool to work on something that you're a fan of.
Yeah.
Because it had been around for a couple of years already and you walk in, you're like, wow, yeah. this is like to be a part of something that you watch. It's so cool.
Yeah. So what would you say to someone who has booked their first legit big time as far as just advice on set or, you know what I mean? Like, or how to prepare for it.
Be prepared to do your thing. And then when you walk in, be prepared for them to tell you to, like, do something completely different. So just be as flexible and helpful as possible. Just know your stuff backwards and forwards. And then if they tell you instead of sitting at this desk and talking, we're going to, like, run down this hill and do the scene. You just got to be ready to, like, do whatever. Because once you're on set, they are on the clock financially. So things just, like, start happening fast. They just push 20 people into a room, and they put the extras over there, and you don't know what order they're going to shoot in or what they're going to shoot first. You just got to be totally flexible.
As far as, like, your pages, like, how far in advance, typically, would you say you get the scene that you would be shooting?
I mean, you get it the audition, usually, and then you'll have everything probably a week beforehand, and then you could get up to, I think I got 5 edits, like, in a week.
Oh, damn, yeah.
So they might change a word, they might cut a line, they might move a line, they might move your line while you're shooting it. That happened to me. They're like, why isn't this working? That's because they wanted to switch the dialogue around, so they had one of the characters speak in a different spot. So it's like, they can change anything, so just be ready to be flexible.
What are your goals right now? Like, what are you looking to do? What's interesting to you?
I'm excited about a pilot season. I'm excited about... I have a show dropping on Hulu in January that'll be really fun.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
Can you tell us what the name is?
It's The Path on Hulu.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's great.
With Aaron Paul and Michelle Monaghan. I'm excited for season 2 because I got to do a bunch of stuff on that. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And so were you a recurring character then? And just for our listeners, can you explain just what that's like to be a recurring on a show?
It's funny because when I first booked it, I didn't know that it was going to come back. So when they were like, we think you might be in more than one, I was like, great.
That's awesome.
All of our stuff was shot in the same place. So even though it was a couple episodes, it does still feel like a little isolating from mm-hmm. the rest of the show because, you know, if you're just in one plot line and there's all this other stuff going on, you can still... I met like one actor on the show because I was always working with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because you watch, like, I watched season 1 and you know the whole story, and you don't know where it's going to go, and you don't even know where your plot line is going to go. So you just take what they give you with each scene.
Was it just kind of like you shot the first episode and then it was like, oh, you're coming back. Okay, cool.
I think I knew before the first one that it was going to be reoccurring, but you don't know where it's going to go. So all you have is like those two pages to go off of. So you try to listen to the director. And
did you have multiple directors?
We had three different for the first three. And then it might have been a repeat director. So and each director works different ways. And a lot of times you get no feedback whatsoever. So you just hope you're doing a good job and you're screwing it up. Someone tells you. You know, there's so much trust. You just got to go do it and trust that the directors are watching and can put together a good story, because there's you don't just go watch your dailies, you know, you don't get to do anything. Sometimes you don't even know you know where the cameras are, but you don't know if you're being featured, you don't know if they're being featured sometimes.
And so you had your pages, but do you know what's going on in the larger episode?
No. Yeah. That's the other thing. It's like, I'm excited to see season two because I've seen the schedule. So I see like little sentences of like, you know, John goes to the store. Like, John finds a body under the car. And you're like, oh.
Right.
So there's, I know things that are happening.
Right.
But I don't have the whole episode. I only have like, you know, two of the 60 pages.
That's annoying.
Yeah, I know. It's hard though with recurring roles, just having to organize people's schedules. It's hard to audition for other things. I mean, it's not hard to audition for them, but it makes everything more complicated because it's like the path doesn't own you, but you have sort of like a, not loyalty, but like, yeah. Of course you like want to be available for them.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, if HBO calls, you want to be available.
Right, right.
But at the same time, you can't just sit on your couch and wait for HBO to call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's very exciting. So that happens in January?
Yeah, January 25th, I think it airs.
For that, do they release a new one every
week,
or do they do all
of them?
I think what
they
did
the first season, they did one a week.
Okay.
Like every Wednesday. I'm not sure if they're doing the same thing this year.
They'll just dump it. Like Netflix,
right.
They'll just put it out there. A million different shows at once. Like, what?
Would you say you're primarily now auditioning for TV?
Yeah, mostly. Because a lot of the theater stuff is happening out of town, and I'm just not wanting to leave home.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff coming into Broadway next season, so there'll be a lot of auditions for that kind of stuff. And I got to do a play, was it last year or the year before? In town, so that was fun.
Oh, what play?
I did Living on Love. It's a new comedy. It was at the Longacre, the 46th.
And that's a good schedule for you, right? Like a Broadway show or like an off-Broadway show in town?
Oh, yeah. It makes it hard when you have a 9-to-5 and I would be working at night, but we make it work in that instance, you know?
Right. I would imagine it would be hard, though, you doing a show at night and then your wife works 9-to-5. When do you see each other?
Well, luckily we haven't had that overlap yet with
okay.
since the baby. In that instance, you would take advantage of your Mondays.
Yeah, totally. And so are you still like interested in musicals? Like, is that something you still audition for?
Yeah, I think my chorus days are over. I never really had a lot of interest in doing that anyway.
Do you dance?
I move very well. I consider myself sort of an athlete.
Gotcha.
But I've never been a big dancer. It's also not been something that I've been terribly interested in, but I'm happy to do musicals because I love to sing, and there's
right.
a lot of great acting roles in a lot of musicals too.
Yeah, definitely.
But luckily there's been a lot of plays and TV stuff going on for me to get it for.
Yeah, especially with TV, it's just so great that there's like, I think last time I counted there were like 22 or 23
mm-hmm.
shows that shoot here,
and they're doing well, which is
yeah.
wonderful that, you know, they're on like season, you know, 40 of Blue Bloods or whatever.
Oh my god, I know.
It's great for New York.
Yeah, no, Law & Order is the best because it's like season 20. Like,
right.
It's crazy.
There is a book by Stephen Pressfield called The War of Art.
Okay.
That is about, he's a writer and it's a lot about writing, but it's also about facing your personal resistance and just getting work done and taking the first step to just do something.
Yeah.
And it's very simple. He writes, you know, there's sometimes just a paragraph on a page, but I can't recommend this book enough. It's just about like, stop doing the research, stop making excuses for not doing something, and just like start on page one and start doing whatever you want to be doing.
I love that. Tell me the name again.
It's called The War of Art. He also has a book called Turning Pro and like sort of some sequels.
Oh, okay.
But start with The War of Art. It's an awesome, awesome book about creativity and just like taking the first step. he has a blog too. It's really great stuff. But that book, I was just flipping through it and I was like dog earing every page. I was like, oh my God, it's like changing my life. Like, oh,
that's so great.
It's so good.
Do you have like a website or how can
I
people
have,
stay in?
Like... a website. It's mattbailey.info. On there is my Twitter and my information and stuff.
Well, thank you for sitting down with
us. Of course, my pleasure.
I'm sorry it's so cold in here. I just realized that. Okay, good. Well, so if everyone could go to the website www.classactorhack.com and sign up for our mailing list.
You can email us yourself at podcast@classactorhack.com. We'd love to hear from you. You can review us on iTunes, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, like us on Facebook.
Yeah.
And love us forever. We are also actively seeking sponsors and donations if you're interested in supporting the cause.
Shoot us an email. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. If anything, my mother will listen to it.